Heuristics and biases. There are lots of reasons why we don't reason particularly well. And there are lots of just basic limitations that are built in that influence our reasoning ability. Things like problems with memory that we talked about before. In some cases, we just can't do the math. The more complex the problem is, we don't have the computational abilities. Without getting out the calculators or the pieces of paper, we just can't do it in our head. Sometimes we just don't have time. We have to make a decision really quickly. We don't have time to reason steps through. Well, how do we make good, reasonable decisions then in those cases where we don't really have the time, when we have to do it almost automatically? Sometimes a very quick inference, if it's fairly accurate, if it will be close to the right answer, can be better than something that is much more precise but takes a great deal of time to make. For instance, is that snake poisonous or not? So on. Or which direction should I go here? The longer you take to make the decision, the more likely something bad is going to happen, so it's good to be able to make those snap decisions as long as they're close to being right. Well, those strategies that we use to make those quick decisions are called inferential heuristics. They're quick. We use them all the time. And they're sort of programmed into us, so we use them without even being aware that we're using a particular heuristic. They're really useful. For one reason, they're extremely quick. We don't have to go out and gather data. Most of these heuristics will already have the data that we're going to appeal to. We don't have to determine likelihoods. They're almost automatic. But some heuristics also can lead us astray. They can make us reason wrongly in particular ways. And when they do that, they're called biases. Okay, on a pretest that I didn't have you take at the beginning of the class, one of the questions on that particular pretest is, do more people in the U.S. die from murder, or do more people in the U.S. die from suicide? Another question, are there more famous people from Oklahoma or from Kansas, which two states have roughly the same population? Okay, to answer those questions off the top of our heads, we use something called the availability heuristic. That's when we draw conclusions about frequencies or proportions based on cases that we have easy access to. All these cases that we have in our memory, or what can we easily imagine? So this is sampling. This is a sampling case, but the sampling is done in our heads. And a lot of times this heuristic can be really accurate. For instance, are there more Fords or are there more Jeeps? Well, to answer that question, all we do is we think back about all the cars that we've seen. Have we seen more Fords or more Jeeps? We think there are more Fords because we remember seeing more Fords out on the road. And it's true. The reason that's accurate is because we have seen more Fords because, in fact, there is a higher proportion of Fords to Jeeps. So if that data is available to us because it's frequent, then the reasoning is good. If it's available to us for other reasons besides its frequency, then that reasoning can go badly. For instance, what's the risk of a terrorist attack versus stroke? Fewer than 1 in 1 million U.S. citizens are killed by terrorists. Okay. More people die from strokes. What's the risk of dying by homicide or stomach cancer? Are you more likely to be killed by a shark or a pig? Okay. Well, in all of these questions, when we think about the data that's available, I hear a lot more about shark attacks. I don't hear about pig attacks. I hear about terrorist attacks. I don't really hear about all the people that die of stroke. And again, if it's a case of homicide, it will make the evening news, but stomach cancer won't. So the data that's available all seems to say that that terrorist attacks are high probability, homicides a high probability, and shark attacks are a high probability because that's what I hear about. But it's a biased sample because that's what the news reports. Prejudices and stereotypes. Stereotypes get reinforced because we remember behavior that fits that stereotype. And we'll talk about this later. This is called a confirmation bias. Okay, now the representativeness heuristic. Remember, the availability heuristic is when we appeal to a sample that we already have available to us, either in our memory or imagination. When we use the representativeness heuristic, we are saying this person is very likely to be that type because they are really close to the ideal, the paradigm case of that type. So we reason like this. Something X seems a lot like your typical A, therefore X probably is an A. Mike is 270 pounds, very fit, very tall. He looks a lot like your typical pro football player. He probably is a pro football player. That's a use of the representativeness heuristic. It's a bad use of the representativeness heuristic. Now we've already looked at this problem fairly recently. So Linda's 31 years old. She's single, outspoken, bright. She's a philosophy major. She did all this stuff about social justice in college. What's more likely? Is it more likely she's a bank teller, and active in feminist movement? Well, using the representatives heuristic, we say, okay, she seems a lot like your typical feminist activist, therefore she probably is a feminist activist. Okay, that gets us back to the gambler's fallacy. So when we rely on the representativeness heuristic too much, we tend to commit the gambler's fallacy. So if you look at those two strings of heads and tails, if you were to flip a coin, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times, the series that you get would look a lot more like the first one than the second one. So that leads us to believe that the first one is more likely than the second one, but we know that's false. They're equally likely. It's just that when we flip the coin 8 times, what we get is more likely to look something like the top one. But it leads us to commit this gambler's fallacy. Okay, now we know that the more specific a description that we make of something, the less likely it is to occur. We're adding more conditions that have to be met. But the more specific the description, the better it fits the profile, and we think then the better it is, closer it is to the representative case of that thing. So it makes us commit these flaws about probabilistic reasoning. An example, got a group of men in this particular town, 70 engineers, 30 lawyers. You pick one at a random from the group. Here are the facts about this person. He's 30 years old. He's married, no children, high ability, high motivation, should be quite successful in his field. He's well-liked. Is he more likely to be an engineer or lawyer, or are they equally likely? Well, that description fits both of the paradigms for engineers and lawyers. So somebody might say, well, he's equally likely to be an engineer or lawyer, but that's confusing the base rate or ignoring the base rate. So given that in this case there are many more engineers than lawyers, he's much more likely to be an engineer than a lawyer. So you need to take into account the base rate information. The base rate information will let you know whether this is a good use of the availability heuristic or not. Okay, you commit the base rate fallacy when you neglect base rates when you make these judgments about probabilities. Okay, so what should you look for? Well, don't be misled by really specific descriptions. Okay, that makes it easier to imagine what this person is like, but it also makes it less likely that a person's going to meet all the right conditions. And if somebody gives you some base rate information, use that when you can. So if somebody says, is this person more likely to be a farmer or more likely to be a banker? And they tell you they live in a particular town, the most important piece of information that you can get is, well, what's the proportion of bankers to farmers in that town? You don't need to know exactly what those base rates are. Just knowing that they're a lot more one than the other is going to help. Okay, anchoring and adjustment. One question that got asked on psychology test was to estimate the percentage of African countries in the UN. How much is it, above or below 10%? That's the question. Okay, the average response is 25%. The correct answer is 35%. Now, another group is asked, what's the percentage of African countries in the UN? How much is it, above or below 65%? Notice that the average response is 45%. It's a lot higher in this case. Why? Well, the reasoning goes like this. 10% is too low. It's got to be higher than that. So you start at that 10% mark and you work up. Or 65% is too high and you work down. Either way, those people have a starting point. They move from there. They don't move very much. Okay, so this is called anchoring and adjustment bias. You're given an anchor and you adjust from that anchor. Very often you don't adjust enough. So the anchor sort of biases our judgment, tends to influence us to make a biased judgment. Okay, in this case, 5 seconds to estimate the product of this. Well, in this case, if you start with 8, go to 1, the average response is 2250. If we reverse them, I mean, the answer is exactly the same. The answer is a little over 40,000. But if we reverse those and show them to people, notice that they get a much lower answer because they anchor it at the beginning and adjust from there. Okay, even if we know that those anchors are arbitrary, in a study with the same questions about the African countries in the UN, people did it with an anchor that got selected by spinning a Wheel of Fortune wheel, where you spin the wheel and it would give you 10% or 65%. So they know it's completely arbitrary, but it still had a strong effect. Okay, you can read about that in the text. Moving on, why is this a worry? Well, this is a worry because people will use it to manipulate us. A negotiator will set an anchor by being the first one to suggest a price, for instance. And if they suggest it, then you start working. You'll suggest another one, but you use their suggestion as a starting point. So the person who gets to set the anchor really has a lot of power. Okay, this is used by a lot of people, auctioneers, when they ask for an opening bid, right? Who will start at $100? Well, nobody gives a bid of $100, so he backs it down. Do I hear 80? And then somebody says 80. Well, he made it more likely to get that 80 by starting it at 100 than he did if he were to start it at 60 or something. And kids will do this too when they ask their parents for something. You know, can I have a new car when I turn 16? Well, I can't have a new car. So how about a new computer? Well, given the anchor of the car, the computer is going to sound like a reasonable request. Okay, we don't realize that these anchors are influencing us. So we need to think about these things in terms of anchoring and adjustment. And if somebody gives you an anchor that seems extreme, you really need to worry because the contrast effect is going to make anything else seem a lot more reasonable. Okay, and that's the end of that presentation.